You're listening to Morning Edition on WNYC. Residents of the New York metropolitan region are more likely than other Americans to spend their final months trudging from doctor to doctor for treatment and in the end dying in hospitals. In the first part of our series, Deathbeds, WNYC's Fred Mogul reports on the emotional and financial costs of this health care and what some people are doing about it.
Regret is a frequent companion of grief. This is what Ron Faber regrets nearly a year after his wife Paula died.
I would have rather had a really okay 4.5 months with her than this endless set of treatments.
The diagnosis, small cell lung cancer, the choice, treated aggressively to extend her life, but probably not cure the disease, or manage the pain and focus on the quality of life. It was the 74-year-old Paula's third cancer in a decade, but she didn't hesitate.
I mean, she was going to fight it every inch of the way.
That meant shuttling back and forth to Beth Israel Hospital in Manhattan for chemo and radiation therapy. Paul at one point became catatonic and spent 9 days in the hospital.
I mean, she looked like death itself.
She soon stopped eating, and Ron brought her back to the doctor, who mystified them by focusing on her cell count, which he said was improving.
She was 67 pounds, and the doctor was actually saying, you know, these tests are really quite positive. And she just started to scream.
Terminally ill patients like Paula Faber frequently opt for aggressive treatment. But they do so more frequently in metropolitan area hospitals than almost any place in the country, according to Dr. David Goodman. They do this even though they also say, in survey after survey, that they want to spend their final days as far away from hospitals as possible.
What they hope for is to be able to take care of unfinished business. And the reality is that medical care, in fact, can interfere with that in rather dramatic ways.
Goodman studies end-of-life care at Dartmouth Medical School, and he says if you look at every hospital nationwide, New York and New Jersey dominate the list when it comes to the number of days people lie in hospital beds, the taxpayer dollars spent per person, and the likelihood patients will end up on a ventilator or feeding tube.
New York City continues to lag in serious ways with regards to providing patients with the environment that they want near the end of life.
Take Beth Israel, where Paula Faber was treated. Patients there spend more than 3 weeks of their last 6 months in a hospital bed, twice the national average. About half the Beth Israel patients who die in a given year do so in the hospital rather than at home or elsewhere. Again, twice the national average. And Beth Israel patients cost Medicare $78,000 in their last 2 years of life. That's better than many places in the region, but yes, it's still twice the national average.
It's a very challenging problem that I think we struggle with.
Dr. Jeremy Bull is the chief medical officer of the Mount Sinai Health System, which acquired Beth Israel last year.
Mount Sinai Hospital has spent a very long time investing in geriatric resources and palliative care resources and expertise. And I think we've made some headway, but we're swimming against a very, very stiff stream.
The stream he's talking about consists of several different currents that bring patients extensive end-of-life treatments and hospital stays at Mount Sinai, Beth Israel, and dozens of hospitals from Albany to Trenton. There has been some improvement, but it's been slower than the country's as a whole. Goodman, from Dartmouth, says reason number one for this lag is quantity. People end up in hospitals here so often, he says, because this region simply has a lot of hospital beds.
One of the truisms of healthcare is that whatever resources are available or whatever beds are built, they tend to get filled and they have in New York City.
Reason number two, every region has its own medical culture. And the one here is built around highly trained specialists and subspecialists who see it as their job to cure illness. Dr. Diane Meyer says the result of this is that
if there's a cancer, it needs chemotherapy. That if there's heart failure, it needs, you know, a procedure. That if there's a fracture, it needs a surgical repair.
Meyer is the director of the Center to Advance Palliative Care at Mount Sinai Hospital. She says the glut of specialists is compounded by reason number three, money. For all those specialists, it's simply good business to constantly refer patients back and forth to each other for tests and procedures.
So if I'm an endocrinologist, if I refer to the cardiologist will refer back to me for endocrine problems. So it's like a cottage industry sort of thing.
More and more, though, hospitals are getting a single payment from commercial and government insurers for each patient and losing money when treatments and tests pile up. Meyer says hospital care needs to adapt.
The Wild West, the sort of open faucet of money, where whatever you do will pay you. And the more complicated thing you do, the more we will pay you. There's a recognition now that really the party's over.
Healthcare leaders are trying to find more ways to treat people at the end of life in outpatient settings than at home. Lorraine Ryan from the Greater New York Hospital Association is working with 36 hospitals to develop what they call palliative power plans for certain high-needs patients.
Terminally ill cancer patients would have one type of power plan that might be all about pain management as well as the emotional support versus someone with a chronic illness, you know, a rheumatoid arthritis patient who might be losing the ability to navigate activities of daily living.
At Mount Sinai, the chair of surgery now demands his staff discuss hospice alternatives with terminally ill patients and make an electronic note of the conversation that can be tracked. If it doesn't happen, he demands to know why. Diane Meyer says every hospital doctor should follow this example.
All of medicine needs to be willing to say, why did this person with end-stage dementia have 3 or 4 hospitalizations in the last 3 months of life and die in the intensive care unit? You know, this was a terrible experience for the patient and family, a lot of unnecessary suffering, and over $1 million in cost to the taxpayer. How did that happen?
It's a question Ron Faber is still asking. A year after his wife Paula died, he thinks about how his oncologist was weirdly optimistic about her prospects. Sure, it was Paula's decision to fight the cancer every inch of the way, but Faber thinks she might not have if doctors had told her more about the upsides of palliative care and the downsides of aggressive treatment.
I think they sold her on it, yeah. She was so afraid of death that she was ready to buy, and they knew it. I think this happens all the time.
Hospice had come up before as an option, but the Fabers just thought of that as a place to go and die. And no one had told them otherwise. Then a social worker explained hospice is something that can happen at home, too. Belatedly, the couple chose that option, and hospice workers from the Visiting Nurse Service of New York came to their Greenwich Village apartment.
I mean, once they arrived, it was like putting everything together. And everything, from that moment on, everything was right.
It turned out to be the final 5 days of Ron and Paula Faber's almost 50 years together. For WNYC, I'm Fred Mogul.